I lift high my spirit and see from a new viewpoint the reality that I am. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you the thought for today. I lift high my spirit and see from a new viewpoint the reality that I am. We saw the Dead Poets Society film the other night, and it had our good friend, what's his name?
Robin Williams.
Excellent actor, who was playing the part of the teacher who was encouraging the boys to think for themselves. And at one point, as a teacher, he just leaped up on top of his desk at the front of the room, and he said, "Why do you think I'm here?" And one boy said, "Because you wanted to look down on us." And another boy said, "You want to be higher than us?" And he says, "No, I'm here because I have a new perspective of you. I am getting a new view. I lift high my spirit and see from a new viewpoint the reality that I am. I'm seeing you from a different point of view, not straight on eye to eye, but I'm looking at you all down there and doing your thing. Come, if you don't believe me, come on, get up here." And he told each of the boys to jump up on his desk and look. Well, they did, but they were a little reluctant and they wanted to get off the desk right away because they felt that they didn't belong there. They didn't belong there, and of course they didn't. Anytime you feel you don't belong there, you don't. But when you have learned to lift high your perspective, lift high your spirit, and see from a new viewpoint the reality that you are, you're not always comfortable with it. Because when you see who you are from another perspective, you're not comfortable. Now, if a person could do this, and it can be done, but it's not easily done, if he could take a video camera of you and just sort of surreptitiously, secretly photograph you throughout the day, doing all the little things you do, going to the bathroom, brushing your teeth, you know, combing your hair, sitting at the table, eating your food, scratching yourself, getting up and getting something and sitting down again, how you handle yourself, and then how you handle yourself in front of the dogs and in front of the cats, how you handle yourself when your husband or wife or friends come in and you talk to them, but what sort of expression you have on your face when you hear that Roger from next door is coming over. And you say, "Hi, Roger. Gee, it's nice to see you," you know. And then you completely do a turnaround. Instead of saying, "Roger, you're the last person I want to see this morning. I wanted to have a moment's peace." Roger say, "Oh, excuse me. Okay. See you later." And he'd take off and you'd have peace. And you say, "Did I offend him? Who cares? Were you honest? Were you out in the open? Did you say meanness to him? Did you say meanly, 'Roger, you are the stinkingest guy I have ever met and you bugs me. Get out of my life, please.' You didn't say that. You just said, 'Roger, you're the last one I wanted to see this morning. I wanted to have a moment of peace before I get going with my day. You mind?' 'No, not at all. I'll see you tonight.'" But, you know, he's not offended because you don't create him offended. You see, but you create him in your own miserable way, because you would be offended. If somebody told you what was really on their mind, not unkindly, but just what was on their mind, you'd be offended. If someone said, "Hey, when you come around here, you always seem to stir up a problem. Now, why is that, you know?" And you say, "Well, I don't stir up a problem. Everybody else stirs up a problem." Yeah, that's the problem. Everybody else stirs up a problem when you come around here. And that isn't really what I'd like to have. Well, I had never noticed that I stirred up a problem. Well, that's the problem. You never noticed it. And when we don't notice these things, then, of course, they're a problem. Now, Let's look at your situation and stop calling it a problem. Let's look at your situation from another point of view. Now, just think, if you were sitting at your breakfast table and you were relaxing and having a cup of coffee just after you finished your orange juice and you're going to just maybe even smoke a cigarette or whatever it is that you do and just relax. And then the neighbor comes, "Hey, Herb, can I borrow your vacuum cleaner? Can I borrow your lawnmower? Can I borrow this?" And think, "Oh, what a way to start the day. I wished I could have got out of the house before he asked me. Let him ask my wife, you know. Let her make the decision." But no, you're given that permission because you created that. Now, when you can look from a higher point of view, you can see that you've created it. Now, where do you sit when you're having your cup of coffee? Do you sit right in front of the window so your neighbor can see you there? Or do you sit back on the patio where you have a little peace and quiet? Or do you go to your bedroom and sit in the easy chair in your bedroom and just relax and have your cup of coffee? Do you announce yourself that you're available for the wonderful counseling that you always do whenever people come over? You know, what sort of a game are you playing? You're the one who said, "You know, Roger, anytime you have a problem, just come over and we can talk about it and, you know, make sense out of it so that you feel better." "Well, I got a problem now," Roger says, and you think to yourself, "Oh, no, not just before I get going and get in this heavy traffic and everything." Now, Roger says, "But I got to talk to you now." So Roger talks to you, and it isn't so bad. And you say, "Well, what do you think you should do about it?" And Roger says, "Well, I don't know." "Well, do you think you should get a divorce just because she's interested in your neighbor?" "Well, no. Why don't you go over and talk to your neighbor and say, 'Look, Ralph, my wife's getting interested in you, and I'm not really too happy about that. What are you doing that's turning her on? Tell me so I can do that.'" You know, and he'd say, "Well, I didn't know I was turning her on. I thank you very much, you know, but I'm not doing it on purpose." "Well, yes, you are, but because you turn all the women on. All the women come into your life. They want to, you know, be real close to you because you're just a cool guy. And I mean, tell me your technique." But, you know, can he take offense at that?
No.
No. And will he continue to pursue your wife even unconsciously but consciously? He'll think about it very carefully. And then you say to him, "You know, Ralph, you're a fantastic guy, but if anybody ever starts making eyes at my wife and trying to alienate her affections from me, they're going to find themselves with two blind eyes, you know, pow, pow. You know, I don't just do one light out, I do both." And so Ralph says, "Well, I'm sorry, maybe I should wear my glasses when I'm around your wife, you know." "Your glasses?" "Yeah, I have these sunglasses that are very dark and I can't see anything hardly, but that way I'm not as charming as when I'm, you know, just with my normal eyes." "Well, that could be, but thank you for working on it, Ralph. We're good neighbors, we've been neighbors now these 8 years, and we could be neighbors for another 8 years, but I don't want to punch you, but don't alienate my wife." "But it's not my..." "Yes, it is your fault. When you are around my wife, you say, 'You got the greatest husband in the world. Your husband is always thinking about you. Your husband said he was going to punch out my eyes if I make an approach to you. And so, please, you know, don't make trouble for me by being so wonderful to me." But whatever. Now, he's seeing from a different viewpoint, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He's seeing from two punched out eyes, you know. And the wife is seeing from a different viewpoint. She's seeing from the point of view that just because there's a beautiful man out there, she shouldn't get attracted to him. She can be delighted in him. She can look at that man and say, "Wow, he's great, he's super." But never to the point, "I wish my husband were like that," or "I think I'll switch, you know. It's time for a change. My husband has been getting a little boring lately." But you see, that guy will get boring too.
Mm-hmm.
And these things just work out like that. But to see it from a new perspective, to see it from a new viewpoint, is very important. I know, I say to the group right now, I am raising a baby at my house. He's a baby puppy, and he's going on 9 weeks. Great guy. Golden retriever. His name is Rex. And while he is being trained in the house to be house trained, not house broken, but house trained, I have some wire fold up fences that I set around that limit his territory. And so it sort of channels him out to his doggy door to do his duty outside. And so I tell everybody, I say, I have those fences there. So please come in the back door, not the front door. I have a one-room house, so it's no big deal. Just don't come to the side door because I have a chair right in front of the door there. I mean, there's not enough room with all the fencing I get inside the house and the dog and everything else. I'm going to take a few things out temporarily. Give me a little bit of room to be in there. So I say to my family, I say, please come around to the back door. And I shout and scream, like I said, Ingeborg, Ingeborg! And she didn't pay any attention to me. And she stuck her head and I said, please come around to the back door. So what does she do? She goes into the doggy pen. We have a special pen we made for the dog outside. Well, there's only one entrance and exit to it, and that's by the front door, and there's no back exit. I hadn't intended it to be a permanent thing. It was only temporary while he was learning how to stay close to the house and, you know, mind. Well, she found that out. So she came back and stuck her head in again and said, go around this way. And so she went around this way and came to the side door. And I said, no, to the back door. So she opened the side door and handed me the message she wanted to give me and then closed it and said, see you later. No. But you see, it's not the matter that she did anything wrong. It's just the matter that she didn't do it right. I had given specific instructions to her at the front door when she opened it. I said, please come around to the back. Now, the back is not the side, because the side is got chairs shoved up against it and you can't come in. The back has a nice gateway coming right on in. But no, she came to the side. No, other people do the same thing. And it's really quite interesting. Our handyman, he came to the door, and I put my thumb around to the back, and so he opened the door to the direction I pointed and came in. And when he came in, the puppy was jumping all over him. And he says, Herb, I got these things for you. And I said, well, great. Well, I didn't tell him anything about going to the back. I figure it's not worth it. The thing is, you're not different from he or from Ingeborg. You're all people who think that you're listening, but you don't. You think you're listening to the divine in you, but if you don't listen to the divine in you any better than you listen to me, you're never going to hear what the divine in you has to say. And the minute you start really learning to be disciplined, listening in the outer, then you will be disciplined listening in the inner. And you get a new viewpoint, because the viewpoint you've had in listening within, with your attitudes of mind, of paying attention just a little bit that gets you going, no way at all. You want to have a disciplined mind where you listen clearly, wonderfully, and perfectly to whatever is being said without judgment, and then follow it. I say, please water that plant. And you say, but it's already been watered. Please water that plant. But it's got water, you can see water. Please water that plant. But it'll overflow. Please water that plant. But Ellen says she doesn't like too much water on these plants. Please water that plant. But I have to go get some water. My bucket is empty. Please water that plant. Oh, just a minute. I'll go get some water. please water that plant. Now, shut up and go get the water and bring it back and water the plant. You must always have the last word. You must always have the last comment. You must always one-upmanship the person who is giving you instruction. And this is a very sad state of affairs, because your one-upmanship is going to cause you to lose out on everything. Now, so you come back in, and you have water in your bucket, in your watering can, and you go to water that plant. And then I say to you, thank you for bringing your water in to water that plant. Please do not water that plant. But you told me to water it, and now I'm all set to water it. I brought the water in here. I've done everything you wanted. I sat through all that please water that plant bit, you know, 8 or 10 times, and now you tell me don't water it. That's right. I tell you, don't water it. I had planned on telling you not to water that plant, but you seemed persistent in thinking that the plants needed water. And so I told you, water the plant. And so then you had the determination that that plant shouldn't be watered for whatever reason. And so you said, I'm not going to water it. I don't care whether you tell me to water it, God, or not. See, you call me God sometimes, yeah. But the thing is, God in you wants to make the decision. Are you doing a favor for me or not? If you're doing a favor, do what I ask you. Now let's go back to the story of Abraham. Remember Abraham? Abraham was told by God, I'm going to test you and see just how much of a schnook you are. Now, Abraham didn't hear that. He just heard God say, go take your son, tie him up and put him on the altar and burn him as a sacrifice to me. And Abraham said, my only son, my favorite son, oh! He didn't say that. He said, yes, God. He listened. Yes, God. And so then he took his son and tied him up, and he was ready to put a knife in his heart before he burned him. You know, it's easier to burn somebody when they're dead than it is when they're screaming and hollering in the fire. So he liked that, I know. And so he put his son there, and his son was a very fine, dutiful son. He said, Dad, you know what's right. You know, whatever you choose to do, you know what's right. I have full trust in you, Dad. And so then God said to Abraham, cool, boy, you passed your test. You're okay. In my book, you're okay. Go and untie your son and release him. And go to that bush right over there. See where that ram is caught in the bush? Go get him and give him as your sacrifice. You see, if Abraham hadn't listened to God all the way through, his son would no longer be with him. But Abraham was able, step by step, to listen to the divine within without judging, without saying, but God, why my son? God, what have I done that's so terrible? You got to take my son away from me. You see, the moment you fight it, the blessing is lost. But the moment you say, yes, God, yes, Father, whatever you ask of me, I will do. I will do. And then he didn't have to do it. But if you, in your thinking, think you will do it because you know you're not going to have to do it,
yeah,
then you did not get the blessing. And this is the difficulty. People say, well, the Bible has other stories of that. The one woman who wanted a child, and the rabbi says, you go and get your most prized possession, bring it to me, and we'll talk about your child. So she got her coat, which was her prized possession, very special coat, and she brought it to the rabbi, except she couldn't find him. He moved to another city. So So she chased him to another city, and he moved to another city, and she chased him there, several cities. Finally, she caught up with him, and he says, "Oh, you? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Give me your prized possession. Here it is, my coat. Well, go. Go and get pregnant, you know." So she went, and shortly she was pregnant, and she had a beautiful child. She passed her test, didn't she? So her neighbor, when she told her neighbor what had happened, her neighbor says, "Oh, I want to get pregnant too. You know, I haven't had a kid yet either." And well, you go and talk to the guru. You go talk to the rabbi and see what he has to say. And she says, "Oh no, I'll just follow what you did. I will just take my most prized possession and take it to him." And so she did that. And when she got there, he says, "No, it doesn't work. You know why you're doing it. You know how it works, but that's not, I have to tell you. You don't tell me how to work the principle. Because if I tell you something and it's ludicrous to you and you don't do it, then you don't pass. If I tell you something and you don't judge it, then you pass and it's done." You see? Too often we get mad at the teacher. And we were just talking about Richard Bach and illusions with the handbook for the reluctant Messiah. And in there, Richard Bach was dealing with this reluctant Messiah, who was quite a remarkable man. And Richard Bach was incredulous all the way through. He could not believe it. He could not believe that these things were happening. And of course, in that, Richard Bach was sort of the representation of humanity. We don't believe that God really exists. We don't believe that there is a power in this universe that is available to us. And that power is available to us, in us, as us, through us, to do anything we want to do. We don't believe that. And because we don't believe it, we're not getting anywhere. Because we don't believe it, we're not accomplishing what we could accomplish. You and I, we are like that. We don't believe it. It's too good to be true. But look at it from a different perspective. A totally different perspective. You brought us a show the other night about a dog. And this videotape on this dog, they're all these nice Walt Disney things. And the nemesis was taken away. The bad guy was dispatched. And the good guy remained. And his dog remained. And the townspeople and the school people gathered around him to hug him and wish him well. And as a conclusion to the picture, high on this sound truck, they had this lift thing that goes way up, you know, you get way up in the sky, not always a helicopter. And so then it showed them moving away as though it were a helicopter. And in showing it moving away, the people got smaller and smaller down below, until they looked very small indeed. And this was the image they went, the grouping together, the solidarity of people who group together for joy and love. It's quite an effective technique. Now, the technique was showing you from a different vantage point what could be done. Another illustration of that, the young boy was on this old church on the back yard on the basketball court, and he cleaned it up and he was playing basketball by himself in the moonlight. And he wanted to clean up the weeds and take down the junk that was all around there. And in the process, he saw these boards half on and half off the fence, and he decided that he was going to clean that up too. So he pushed it down. And when he got the fence pushed down for the 10, 12 feet that he did, he stood back and he looked in awe. for what he saw was the beautiful Vancouver, Washington area. Maybe it was the ocean fjord in Vancouver Bay or something, but beautiful, beautiful light coming across it, beautiful logs gathered against the shore where they didn't get picked up, and it was just gorgeous. And the boy who was wanting to play soccer, basketball, he was so taken by this, he had forgot what he was going to do. And this is what we do sometimes. We're so taken by what we see, what we are revealing to ourselves, that we forget why we're revealing it to ourselves. Now, he came back. He remembered. He remembered that what he was attempting to prove to himself was that he was a good fellow. He could play basketball quite well. He could do these things. And lo and behold, he did them. But you see, he had to clean the deck. It was symbolic that he brushed away all the leaves from the basketball court, that he cleaned up around the inner circle there, the game yard, that he took care of these things on this old church that was in disrepair. Very interesting. Very interesting. Think about that. When you get a new view of yourself, as we say here, I lift high my spirit and see from a new viewpoint the reality that I am. When you get a new view of yourself, you see the reality that you are. And the reality that you are is that you're the creator of your world. And you're the creator of everything in your world. And like the little illustration that ran across my desk the other day, the boy was out enjoying himself, and the neighbor said, "Hi, Joe, how you doing?" And he said, "Just fine." "What have you been doing?" He said, "Oh, I've been going to Sunday school." "Well, that's wonderful. Did you learn anything?" "Yeah." "Well, where is God?" And so the little boy looked him square in the eye. He said, "I'll give you a dime. You can tell me where God is." And the little boy said, "Well, I'll give you a dollar if you can tell me where God ain't." And that's so true that if we can ever tell anybody where God ain't, then we are really miraculous, because God is everywhere, in everything, through everything. So this is where we are today. This is where we are today, getting a new viewpoint, a new image, a new perspective. And with this new perspective, be ready for some very interesting new responses to life. Have a lovely day, and know that this thought for today is designed just for you to make your life richer, fuller, and more magnificent. I love you, I love you, I love you.